Thought I would do this morning is tell you a little bit more of how we got to Fort Wilderness. So as you drove in today, you passed this sign, or drove in yesterday or today, you passed this sign. And Fort is a place that we first became acquainted with in 1996. But how we got here is a little interesting. Back in May of 96, my wife and I had returned back to our home church, having been sent out to help plant a church. And we met with our pastor and his wife, and we were talking about how do we get back plugged into the church. And he said, well, you know, a number of us go up to this place called Fort Wilderness, and one of the best ways to get plugged in is to go spend a week with people, and you get to know them. And that was an interesting opportunity, given that I had grown up in a house where my dad's idea of roughing it was drinking from a hose or staying at a Holiday Inn that didn't have an indoor pool. So the idea of camping was a little bit foreign to me, but my wife had done that growing up. And what was most interesting is we took very much to heart the verse in Proverbs that said, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And our understanding of that verse was not just with regard to spiritual training, but that I think the original text speaks to the idea that every child has a bent in them. Like a river has a bend or a tree goes towards sun. And what you want to do is you want to study your children and find their bent and then encouraging them in that way and give them the opportunity to flourish in that way. So as we looked at our two daughters, who at the time were 5 and 8, they seemed to really love being outdoors. So really based only on that and my wife's agreement, we decided we'd come to Fort Wilderness. We called, there was one cabin left. We thought that was providential, so we made a reservation. But a couple days before we were going to leave for a July camp, our heat pump started making noise that you can only compare to what you hear after people have overeaten at Wrangler's breakfast. It was not pretty. And actually, it was probably failing or it was going to be a big repair. But that was one of those times when we made a decision as a couple and as a family that really set our life on a trajectory that we never imagined where it would lead. We knew it was going to be a lot of money, and we began to doubt whether we should even spend the money to come to Fort Wilderness. And I remember a specific conversation my wife and I had, and I said, you know, I don't even want to call the repairman. I don't want to know what it costs, because I'm afraid if I know what it costs, then we'll say we're not going to go to Fort. And I said, but if this place is what Tom and Judy said it is, 10 years from now, our daughters will never remember that we repaired the heat pump. But they will never forget this place. And so, because my wife is really great, she agreed that we weren't going to call, and we slept for 3 nights with no air conditioning in July in Indiana, which is not a great thing to do. But we didn't even call. We drove up here, and within a couple days, we knew that there was something special about this place. And the reason why that sign is up there is because I remember very vividly as we drove out with that 5-year-old and 8-year-old in the back seat, I heard this voice that said, Dad, next year when we come, here's what we're going to do. And we've been coming every year since 96. My daughters have gone through all the different programs, girls camps, JV camp, lab, they've worked. And I got to give a special shout out to the Labbers. I love the Labbers. And specifically, I need Ellen Leahy to stand up. Ellen is part of our church body. Ellen's one of the female counselors. I knew her when she was an infant, and now she's counseling lab. So, and her mom and dad and her family are actually going to be joining the Fort staff here very shortly, so which is really exciting. But so Fort has been a significant place, and there's a number of things that I think are significant about Fort. First of all, Fort is a place for relationships. Fort is a place where relationships start and relationships are strengthened. And I've got a great example of this this week. So where's my daughter, Emily? Emily, can you stand up? Please stand up. So this is my daughter, Emily, and she has two friends with her, Gloria and Sarah. Stand up, okay? So these young women, beautiful young women, are having a bit of a reunion here. Now, their relationship did not start here at Fort. They kind of grew up together at different points, went to school, church together. But their relationships were strengthened by Fort. In fact, Emily and Sarah were in girls camp. And what you learn at girls camp is this is a place that accepts you, even if you have a really bad haircut and your smile is goofy. And then you get to junior high camp, where you think you're really cool. And all the girls are hanging out, and you're really cool. And your relationship is strengthened because you spent time there. And then you get to high school, and here again, you're at Fort, spending time together. Now, I need to warn you, you can't really see it very clearly, but in the background, there's a tent. And when they got to high school, those girls, those lovely young women you just saw, decided that they weren't going to stay in the cabins with their family. They were going to camp together. And I will tell you that that tent was a two-compartment tent. The back compartment is where they slept, and the front compartment was a landfill. It had an aroma by two or three days into it that when you would walk by, you would think, oh my gosh, the cesspool has, or the septic tank has failed. But no, it was just them piling in wet towels and wet bathing suits. So I need to forewarn you that Gloria and Sarah are camping this weekend. So if you're near campsite 15, yes.
Yeah, we're right next door.
Right next door, okay. Consider yourself warned. I will tell you this. My wife and I, for different reasons, we had to fly up here. And so I asked Gloria if she could carry some stuff up for us. So I went to her house, and it was just her and Sarah, and I gave her the stuff. And she said, I'm not sure we can fit it in, Mr. O. And I said, well, why? And she said, well, Sarah is thinking about getting a chandelier because we're thinking of glamping. So,
They do have power.
It looks like you got someone watching out for you guys. Very observant three-year-old. All right, that's what I like. That's what I like. So anyway, but their relationships are strengthened. And so that's one of the great things about Fort is a place where relationships start and it's strengthened. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. The other thing is that Fort is a place for firsts. Fort is a place where you get to do things the first time in your life. The first time you get to jump off of a rope swing. The first time you shoot a bow and arrow. The first time maybe you make a bead turtle. The first time you eat breakfast outdoors with lethal amounts of hash browns. And for me, which I'm not going to tell you this today, I'm going to save this, it's the first time that you make a basket, which was not a good incident in my history. But it's also the first time you get to drive a pontoon boat. So this is a picture of our daughter when she was younger, when Ron used to give pontoon driving lessons. Now, you need to know, Ron lost his license. He was a licensed pontoon driver's ed instructor, but apparently there was some ugly incident with a moose and a kayak, and his license was revoked. But Fort is a place where it's first, and so I hope you'll take advantage of what Fort does. The other thing that Fort is, I would say, is Fort is what some writers have called a thin place. It's a place where the presence of God just seems closer and more real than anywhere else. And it could be that because we're away from the distractions, we're away from the demands of time. But I can tell you, the staff prays that you will hear from God this week. Now, it might be through the teaching, but it's not always through the teaching. It could be from a conversation that you have at dinner. It could be from a conversation you have with one of the staff. It could be just sitting around a campfire. But the goal to Fort is about relationships. It's about doing things for the first times. But it's also, most importantly, hearing from God this week. And so last night I introduced the idea that we're going to consider the subject of time. And I just want to give you two caveats as we dive into that today and then over the next 5 days or 4 days. First of all, today I'm going to sort of give us a framework to think about. And as we go through the rest of the week, we're going to go a little bit deeper into each of these topics. So today's a framework. The second thing is, in a setting like this, what I often like to do is sometimes I may call on someone out in the crowd here to actually read the scripture that we're going to look at. So if you have a Bible, whether it's on your phone, your iPad, or a book, it'll be helpful because today we're going to move around quite a few different verses as we establish the framework. So last night, I talked about this idea. What comes to mind when you hear the word time? I said when we began yesterday, as today, the one thing that we all have in the same amount that makes us all similar is we all have the same amount of time. We have different talents, different looks. Other than Tom and I, we have different clothes on. But we all have the same amount of time. And yet, it's something we often don't think about. So I've asked people, what comes to mind when you think about time? And I've heard these phrases. Where did it go? I feel like I've wasted a lot of it. I wish I could go back in time and change some things. I'm really looking forward to the future. I'm really just living for the moment, and it's moving so fast. Now, depending on where you're at and what your season of life is and what your circumstances are, you may identify with all of those. But what I'd like us to consider over today and the rest of our time is that time in itself is a gift, something we often don't think about. Time is teleological. Now, if you spend any time with me, you'll find out this is one of my favorite words. And today I'm going to define what that means and why that's so important for us from a Christian worldview to think about time as teleological. And then time is something for which we're going to give account of. It's so often that we just move through the day and move through our activity, and we don't really stop to think that at some point we're going to give account for what we've done with our time. And lastly, what we do with time says as much about what we believe about God than by anything we say. How we use our minutes and our days and our years is a theological statement. And if we don't take consideration of what it is, we'll simply be pressed in to using time the way culture tells us to use time. And frankly, right now, our culture is not looking at time through a Christian worldview. And so that's what we want to do. So the first thing I'd like you to do this morning is take your Bible and start in Genesis chapter 1, which seems appropriate in this consideration of time, because that's where time began. So I'm just going to read some text that you can follow along with, because I want you to see some repetitiveness in what God has done in this first chapter. So in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And then verse 3 said, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Verse 4, God saw the light, it was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. And verse 5 said, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And then look at that last phrase there in verse 5. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And then go down to verse 8. And God called the expanse heaven. And there's that phrase repeated. And there was evening, and there was morning, a second day. And then go down to verse 12. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding fruit after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them, and their kind, and God saw that it was good. And then verse 13, there was evening and there was morning, a third day. Now, I'm not going to read all the instances, but you'll see that God continues to repeat that one phrase over and over and over again, evening and morning, the first day. Now, that's one of those things that it's very easy just to pass right through in the creation story and focus on what God made instead of what God was saying about time at the very beginning. You see, in that statement, I think God is saying something about his relationship between us. We are dependent upon him in all manners. He is gracious and generous towards us, and he is giving us a gift. You see, oftentimes when we think about God, we think about his first move towards us in terms of judgment and chastisement. But actually, his first move towards us is generosity and grace. And he gives evidence to that in that he starts the day, as we think about the day, in the evening. There's a writer, a pastor by the name of Eugene Peterson, who gives us some really keen insight into this idea. Here's what he says. He says, "The first part of the day passes in darkness. Then, but not in inactivity, God is out growing the crops even before the farmer is up and knitting together the wound before the clinic opens. When the farmer and physician awake, they will join in, contributing mightily, but only because grace came first. Likewise, God has been working on and in them, body and mind, while they slept. Yesterday's bruises and slights have begun to heal. Entered this way, morning is new, worth being grateful for, even before we have put our human touches on it. Seeing a day through the eyes of Genesis changes its contours at both beginning and end. When I quit my day's worth, nothing essential stops. I go to sleep to get out of the way for a while. I get into the rhythm of salvation. Human effort is honored and respected, not as a thing in itself, but by its integration into the rhythms of grace and blessing. Morning becomes a time to join in the labors that have already begun without us, an evening of time to let others, actually another, take over. You see, if we think about the day starting in the evening when God is still at work sustaining things and making things happen and multiplying things, it changes the way we wake up in the morning. We wake up with a grateful heart, knowing that things have been sustained and working even while we were not. Now, it doesn't make our work unimportant. It just puts it in its proper perspective. So when we wake up in the morning, we start with a grateful heart because God's already given us grace through the night. He's already shown that he's looking out for our best interest, even while we're unable to. So having this idea of a Hebrew evening-morning sequence conditions us to understand the rhythms of grace in our life. We go to sleep, and God begins his work. Right now, work is elevated to a point where we see human effort as the most important thing. And what God is saying is human effort is important because he's given us work to do, but it's not the most important thing. And it doesn't supplant the idea that he's already been at work in our life. It's a subtle thing, but the fact that it's repeated over and over and over again in Genesis chapter 1 is something we need to pay attention to. And I would challenge you to think about how you would think about your mornings if you really, really, really saw time through that way. Now, there's another thing about time, and that is time is actually the place where we meet God. God is the one who lives outside of time, and yet he chose to come into our space and our time so that we could know him. One of my favorite verses is John 1:14. Again, if you spend any time with me, you'll know that this is something that I point to often. If you can turn there. Actually, we'll start in John chapter 1. I'm going to actually read the first couple verses, but I want us to key in on verse 14. So John chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being." So here's a statement that John is making about the person of Christ, that he was with God, was God, and all things that you see came about because of his creative efforts. But then read verse 14. "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth." You see, what happened in John 14 is that this person who was apart from us came into time so that we might know him. There's a verse in the gospel that says, Jesus said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." So people want to know what God is like or who God is, and this verse tells us that God entered time so that we might know who he is and that we might have relationship with him. C.S. Lewis says that this is like a playwright wanting to know his characters better, so he writes himself into the play as one of the characters. Here's this idea that's spoken of in Philippians, that Christ veiled his glory, veiled his deity, to step into our time and space so that we might know him. You see, he didn't come here just to establish a religion or come here to create some moral rule for people to follow. He came, as verse 14 tells us, so that we might behold his glory and that we might know him and the Father. Fort is about relationship. John 1:14 is about relationship. It's so important that we see that without Christ doing this, he would sit outside of time and we would never know him. And there is a popular view in our day called deism, where it's this idea that God is a watchmaker, that he wound it up and he just sits apart from it and he just lets it run. But that's not what John 1:14 says. It says that he wrote himself into the play so that he might know the characters, so that he might participate with us. He's made himself near, not because he had to, but because he loves us and he wants us to know him. "He who is not bound by time has entered into it so that we might meet him here and now." That's why my opening remarks, I said Fort is a thin place. Fort is a place where you can meet him here and now and know him. Know him through his word, know him through prayer, know him through conversation. God speaks through his spirit, through his word, and through his people. It's about relationship, not just with each other, but with him. The other thing which I'm going to spend some time on, I think, on Wednesday, is talking about the importance of the meanwhile. A number of years ago, I went through my Bible, and I actually circled the places that the word meanwhile appeared. And what we're going to see is that so many times, we're just going through our life, and meanwhile, God shows up so that we might know him, that we might do something as a result of that. The meanwhile is important. We all want the big assignment from God, but actually what I've seen is he works in the midst of the meanwhile to accomplish some pretty amazing things. Now, one last thought about time as a gift, and I'm going to address this on Thursday. Sometimes you get a gift, and it's not what you want. You don't like it. But unfortunately, with our days, it's not something we can easily return. But I'm going to talk about how even in the midst of time as a gift, when we get a day that we don't like, God is working to accomplish something for good. All right, so time is a gift. Time is teleological. So, not theological, teleological. Now, to help you understand what this means, I need to give you some context. So, in ancient times, time was understood in two ways. One is this idea of saeculum, which was the moment of time. The second is the word mundus, which means the place in time. So, when the Greeks or the Romans or the ancients would talk about time, they would talk about either saeculum, which meant this moment, or mundus, which meant this place. Mundus is from the word we get mundane. As history moved on and people saw work that we did every day as not important and spiritual things were more important, they took this phrase and created the word mundane work. That's actually not a biblical view. All work done to the glory of God is sacred in his eyes. But so the idea is that there's secular work and mundane work. That's how this time and age views it. So oftentimes we hear the word secular and we think of it being non-spiritual or non-Christian. That's actually not a full understanding of the word. The reason why it's thought to be non-spiritual is because it rejects anything about time being eternal or time being important beyond this moment. And that's often the way people think about time today. But as a result of that, this is a phrase I borrow from Justin Olson. I don't think he's here. Justin leads the True North program. But he uses this phrase a lot, and I like it. He said, as a result of this, and this is particularly true for young people, they make just for now life choices. I'm gonna do this just for now, but later on when I become an adult, I'll do something else. Or I'm going to do this just for now, but later on I'm going to do this. This idea of a just for now choice is a very popular cultural idea, but it's not a biblical one. Because time, as thought about in the Bible, is teleological. It comes from the word teleos or telos. And it means moving to an end or purpose. This moment in time is important, but this isn't all there is. Time is moving towards an end or purpose. There's a story unfolding in front of us that we're participating in, and the story ends in a particular way that we're going to talk about. But I believe that this is one of the most important things, particularly for young people, to understand about how they order their days. We are so pressured to think from a secular view in our culture that we've lost the idea, even within Christians and even within the church, that time is teleological. We live as if today is all that matters. And yet there's something that tells us that this is not how things will always be. Last night I read from Ecclesiastes, and I specifically didn't read the last part of the last verse, because it says, while God has made everything appropriate in his time, it also says he has set eternity in their hearts. There's something in us that tells us that this is not all there is. And it's not just us sitting here or people who attend church. Hollywood is fascinated with this idea. This is just a sampling of some of the movies that try to answer the question, what's going to happen when this life as we know it ends? Every year you will see 3 or 4 new movies coming out that try to answer that. The robots take over, an asteroid hits the earth, disease runs rampant, aliens invade. all of this makes for great entertainment, but I actually think there's something stirred up within people, because God has set eternity in their hearts, that they have to come up with an answer for this. We make choices every day as though time is secular, yet Hollywood wants us to believe that there's something else going to happen. You see, all these are interesting answers, but the Bible tells us that there's a different telos, a different end. It's speaking of Jesus Christ and his return. So let's turn there real quick. 2 Peter chapter 3. Now, this is where I will ask someone to read. Anyone want to raise their hand and volunteer to read this text? 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 9 through 13. Go ahead. Can you stand up just so everyone can hear you nice and loud? Okay, thank you. So here's a picture of the telos or the teleos at the end, that time is teleological. It is moving to an end. And Hollywood's getting it partly right. There is going to be some destruction. But the end isn't the end for man to figure out how to start over again. The Bible has this hiding in plain sight in so many places. The end is going to be Christ returning and a new heaven and a new earth established for those who know him to dwell with him eternally. There is an end to the story coming, but it's not the one that you see in the theater. If you believe the Bible to be true, the end that's coming is Christ's return and him being revealed in his full glory, not his veiled glory that he came in John 1:14, but his full glory to establish his kingdom and to allow those who are righteous in his sight to dwell with him in the new heavens, in the new earth, in the new Jerusalem. We're going to talk more about that, but when you see those ads for those movies, it should prompt you to remember, yep, there is an end coming, but it's not the one that you think it is. There's a new end coming, and it's one that's going to be glorious, and one that we can participate in, and one we do not need to fear if we know that we are in right relationship with Christ. All right. So we've talked about time being a gift, and we talked about time being teleological. We've got two more I want to touch on real quickly. First of all, I want to talk about the idea that time is something for which we will give account. This was a verse that I became acquainted in college. It's from Ecclesiastes. It says, "Rejoice, young man, while you are young," could say young woman, "and let your heart be glad in the days of your youth, and walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all things God will bring you to judgment." You see, if you live as a just for now person, you've completely ignored the fact that this verse says that even your choices as a young person, God is going to hold you accountable for those. The other verse that often is thought about with respect to this is, "It's appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment." Again, all the things that I'm talking about this morning are hiding there in plain sight. All you have to do is pick up your Bible and read it. Judgment will come, accountability will come, but much like the telos that Hollywood is pointing us to, we don't need to fear this. If we're in right standing with God, and we're going to unpack this idea more about how we stand to hear those words that we all long for, good, well done, good and faithful servant. But accountability and judgment will be coming. Now, Martin Luther has succinctly summarized this the best way that I can think to say. Martin Luther was asked about how he thinks about this, and he said, "There are 2 days on my calendar, this day and that day. We are so to live for Christ and bear good fruit this day, for we will all appear before Christ and give account for our lives that day." What a great way to hold in balance and hold in tension how this day comes. Today's a gift, and I need to unwrap the gift and live according to what God has given me, but I also need to live with the idea that God is going to hold me accountable someday. But that accountability isn't chastisement or judgment, something we fear, but if we're in right standing, it's generosity and grace that he's going to give to us. And again, we'll unpack this idea even more as we think about it. But this day and that day is really important for us to think about. One of the things that I'm going to talk a little bit more is I really enjoy speaking with young people. And one of the reasons why I think God stirred me up to talk about that this week is because this is the area that I think most young people, even in the church, have just missed. That there's a verse in Romans that says, I beseech you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a holy and living sacrifice, which is your reasonable expectation of worship. Then verse 2 says, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you might know what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now that second verse, be not conformed, actually is the idea of a potter or a press, pressing you into a mold. And I think the one area where we have been pressed into a mold maybe more than any other is thinking about time. It's very hard for me to speak with a young person who hasn't thought primarily from a secular viewpoint, not looking as gift as time teleological, not thinking about I'm going to give account. And I think it's just because that's the way our culture points to. It gets us to only think about this moment and this time. And I would say that is a way that culture has conformed us, that we need to step back and say, is this really the right way for us to think about it from a biblical and a Christian worldview? Luther would say, actually, it's not. We need to think about this day, and we need to think about that day, and live each day with those in balance and intention. And actually, I will tell you, it's the most freeing way to live, because it allows you to take and receive the gift this day, without fear, without condemnation, but also then use that gift knowing that at some point you're going to present back to God what he's given to you. Remember, his first move to us is generosity and grace, not chastisement and judgment. And if our view of God is that he's just waiting to punish me, it will change how we receive the day. Now, lest you think this is something that I've just thought about recently, you should talk to my kids. I've told them a long time ago that what I want as an epitaph on my tombstone is open the day. Because to me, gift, the day is a gift that you open and you see what God has given to you. All right, one last thought here to share with you. We've talked about how time is a gift, how it's teleological, and it's something for which we'll give account. But the fourth statement I made at the beginning is what we do with it shows more about what we believe about God, perhaps more than anything we say we believe. So there is a real helpful book for me called Receiving the Day. It's written by a woman named Dorothy Bass. It's actually quite an old book. She's a professor at Valparaiso University. And if you can read that, her book says, The Christian Practice of Opening the Gift of Time. And I had read this book probably 15, 20 years ago, and I actually reread it. And there are some just wonderful thoughts that she has in there to get us to understand how time works. But one of the things that she observes is our problem with time is social, cultural, and economic, to be sure. But it's also a spiritual problem, one that runs right to the core of who we are as human beings. Distortions in the shape of our time foster distortions in the shape of our lives and the quality of our relationships. Indeed, these distortions drive us into the arms of a false theology. We come to believe that we, not God, are the masters of time. Again, being conformed into the world's view of time, we believe that we, not God, are the masters of time. And so, as we think about our days here at Fort, over these next 4 days, I would encourage you to consider these ideas, that time is a gift. Time is teleological. Time is something that we're going to give account for, and time is something that makes a theological statement about what we believe about God. And then there's 4 questions I'd give us to consider over the course of this week. The first one is, if time is a gift, what difference would that make on my attitude each day and how I use my time? What difference would it make if I believe that my day began in the evening when God was at work, even when I wasn't? And how would it change the way I even look at my work? That I'm not doing my work for my own purposes, but I'm doing it as part of joining in God's work to accomplish what he wants to in the world. The second question is, If time is teleological, do I live with that expectation, or do I live with a secular view of time only focused on the moment? I'm so glad that the Labbers are here today, because this is the thing that I enjoy the most, talking to young people. And if I could say one thing just to call you guys out, is this is one of the most important things you need to get straight and not be a just for now kind of young person. Because I will tell you that living as a just for now kind of young person creates damage in lives that takes years and years to get corrected. The messages that we have in culture say, do whatever you want right now because it doesn't matter and you should do it for yourself. But I will tell you, as someone who's got a little more age on you, that is a dangerous way to live, and it takes years to unpack it. So if you can get it straight in your mind that you're living for both this day and that day, you will think differently about the choices you make. Third, if time is leading to accountability and judgment, am I ready? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about that someday there's going to be a that day, and you're going to stand before God, and you're going to give account for what you've done with what you've been given? I'm going to spend a whole day on talking about this because you're going to see that God isn't going to judge you on how much. He's going to judge you on what you did with what you have. Because we all have different amounts of talents and resources to do with. But that's not what he's concerned about. What he's concerned about is, what did you do with what you've been given? And the last thing is, if people looked at how I spend my time, what do you think they would say about what I believe about God? You know, I've said this before, that there's two things I need to look at to know whether someone really thinks rightly about God. I just need to look at their calendar, and I need to look at their checkbook. And those two things will say more than anything else about what you do. And I'm not talking about just going to religious activities. I'm talking about, what are you doing to join God in his work throughout the week? Because he's working all around us, and that's another thing I'm going to spend a day talking about. So, I hope that this framework gives you some things to think about and also points us in a direction about some things that we're going to dive into a little bit deeper. Time is probably not, I would think, a subject that you've heard a lot of messages on, but I'm trusting by the end of the week you're going to be glad that you've been here. And as Todd said last night, which I believe too, I don't think anyone's ever here by accident. This is a thin place, and God wants to speak, whether it be through this teaching or through some other things. So let me pray and we'll dismiss. Lord, we are grateful this morning for the gift of time. We're grateful that you have entered in time to make yourself known so that we might know you personally, not as someone who is up away from us, but someone who has wrote himself into our play. I pray this today, Lord, that you would just continue to speak to us. We thank you for Fort Wilderness and the vision that people had years ago to create a place like this. We thank you for your word, which continues to not change and can speak to us today, just as it did throughout history. Thank you for the beauty of this day. I pray that you would keep us safe as we participate in activities. Thank you for the staff that continues to serve us faithfully. And thank you most of all for just the gift of time. May we look at you today as one whose first move towards us is with generosity and grace, and we receive that. We thank you and we bless you in your son's name. Amen.